The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
A sex revolution among teenagers is what it amounts to today. Young, unwanted pregnancies, early marriages, forced marriages, 50% of teenage marriages breaking up, at least within the first 5 years. And it's a fantastic sociological phenomenon, and it is hurting the United States of America. It's hurting Canada. It's hurting others of our Western countries of affluence. Why have not the combined forces of the church, the school, and the home taught our children about matters involving sex? Why are we missing in society the dimension of God and His laws with regard to sex education? Why is sex education all the way down into the earliest grades of formal education taught from a clinical point of view, with lots of animal examples, lots of cartoons, and lots of racial overtones, instead of being taught in a warm, controlled family environment even prior to that school relationship? And why are our school textbooks almost devoid of the understanding of the right use of sex, of what would be a restriction on its use, as well as just the clinical information of the physiological and the anatomical? Well, many parents these days are getting rather disturbed about some of the things they see their children bringing home from school. They say, well, I didn't realize that my kids were being taught all this type of thing in school. Let me tell you, take a test and just pick up one of the most, perhaps unintellectual, but that's not the right word. The World Book Encyclopedia is a good one. That does not pretend to be a collegiate level encyclopedia. It's more of, say, a high school level. And it would be something I would urge you to do, to pick up the World Book Encyclopedia. I'm not advertising that as a product. There are many encyclopedias. And merely read the article on sex. Just pick it up, turn to the S, and read it. And you will probably find right there in that article something that I think anyone could recommend that parents learn. Because right in that article, written by a lady who has written several books on the subject, is a fairly good, well-balanced, and rather discreet way of explaining many of these things to very, very young children. You can see that the article was written with quite young children in mind. Children clear down in grade school, junior high school, and so on. The last time I was talking about the hang-ups of modern-day society in that today's murder or stolen automobile is liable to be the temper tantrum of the past. The children do tend, as they mature, to revert to age-old patterns that were instilled in them in early childhood. I have seen it proved time and again that even after 4 years or more of formal education in college, of, say, home economics, that many a young girl will revert back to what mom taught, to simplistic dietary methods or food preparation methods, purchasing, shopping methods, and so on, that were something that she saw and observed in subtle inferences and influences at home, and by parental example, more than she will in the course of the next X number of years of married life, putting to practice what she may have learned in formal classroom experience. It's so true with regard to sexual patterns of life, with hang-ups, aberrant behavior, homosexuality, transvestism, various deviations, and so on. These began very, very early in life, nearly always. It is something that was formed in the early formative years. The pattern was there. It's been discovered that the first 5 years of life are very important even in regard to sex education. The last time I was showing seven steps on what parents can do in helping to educate their children. We only got to about number four or five. I'll complete that now very quickly and then get into the rest of it of how sex deviation can be avoided in the home. So first we had start early. That is, parents themselves need to be educated. We have some information on that. The book on the new dimension in sex, I better say that slowly, and also the one on the plain truth about child rearing, which I talked about last time. But the way the parents themselves live, the maturity, the absence of sex hang-ups, the open, and I would also urge biblically oriented, theologically straight and right approach and understanding to the subject of sex in the home is absolutely essential if you want sound, well-balanced, mature young people to be developing and growing up who can overcome the problems of curiosity, a desire for experimentation, and instead of letting this lead them into some aberrant behavior that results in all sorts of twisted hang-ups that plague them in their minds and their lives for the rest of their entire existence, but they're balanced. They have a wholesome and a normal viewpoint about this very prevalent subject of today. So first, the parents themselves need to be educated. And second, I'd said was be first. Don't let other influences, peer groups, peer pressure, entertainment, this medium, newspapers, magazines, porno shops, other kids telling smutty stories and the like, the locker room, school buses, recess, and all this type of thing. And remember that barbershops and places you send your 7-year-old, your 9-year-old, your 11-year-old to get a haircut these days, he's going to pick up the magazine with his centerfold. And if you knew what your kids were looking at right in the barbershop, it would just about blow your mind. So beat the kids to the punch by telling them before the world does. And let me tell you, if you do that, you're going to have to start talking awful early. Would you believe 1.5 or 2 years of age? In order to actually begin to beat the world to the punch by educating your children first, don't panic. Don't try to force too much information on a child too soon. What you've got to do is this. Answer all curiosity soundly, wisely, patiently, but don't make them so overly curious by instilling in them a desire to learn more and more and more that you tried to over-educate them beyond their level of understanding at that age. Now, that says a mouthful, but there are ways that human beings have a certain amount of common sense. Let's face it. If parents just have a little bit of instructional help, if they have some educational materials to which they can refer, and I would suggest an article in an encyclopedia. I doubt that very few people have ever thought that maybe they could get some help if they feel that they need to give their children some sex education by merely turning to an encyclopedia on the article sex, read it themselves, and see if it doesn't give them any kind of clues or ideas about how to logically develop that subject to teach their children about. It might be a suggestion. So, the second principle was to be first. The third, keep parent-child communication lines open. And remember, it's more important oftentimes for a parent to be a good listener than it is a good lecturer or a good teacher. He's not ready to listen to some giant filibustering soliloquy. He's not ready for a giant focal point or a spotlight zeroing in on some crisis that's resulted from you walking in on him in the shower or something of the like. This isn't where it's at. It's not a magic switch that you can, just at that one fell swoop moment and one good solid hour of good hard talk, solve all of your kid's sex problems for the rest of his life. How many parents have done that? Waited and waited and waited until dad comes home all tired in the office and mom says, guess where I found the kids today? They were playing house. You know how they start. They play house. Where do they play house? Well, sometimes they hang up blankets with clothespins where their clotheslines cross. Sometimes they find an old abandoned wagon or a shed or a garage, or they're under the bed, or they're in another room, or they're at the neighbor's house. But they're playing house. Or they're playing doctor and nurse. And she's nursing a sick kid or something like this. Guess what happened? Well, then the story develops. And the guy stands there, he remembers faintly when he was a little kid, the neighborhood kids experimented, cousins came over, he remembers having brothers and sisters, but he doesn't want to really face it himself, so now he's the corporate businessman. Now this is all long ago. What? Why that little monster? Harry, you've got to begin to teach these kids. I mean, they're using language and doing things that just got me really uptight. And so he says, I'll take care of it. So he remembers a magazine article way back that he remembers having seen. He goes and digs it out. All right, kids, he calls them in and sits them down. They're scared half to death. Your mother said you were caught up. Anyhow, your mother said you were bad today. Now I'm gonna tell you. Now, you know about the birds and bees. I mean, I don't want to characterize this in the wrong way and tell you. Now, parents don't do it that way anymore, do they? Sure they do. Lots of them do. They sit them down just like a third degree. They put them on the grill. They say, now, I'm going to tell you what this is and what that is. They get out the drawing board. And sometimes the kids probably discover the parents making a few mistakes because they've been, probably taught a lot more in school and by some peer group, by people in the neighborhood than maybe by their own parents. So keep that parent-child communication line open all the way along from the earliest formative years. Don't ignore it and then wait about the time the poor girl is just ready to begin the menstrual cycle. And then let me just interrupt myself to say something here, and then we'll come back for a minute, and that is this. I have seen cases where I've been associated with schools for a long time, Ambassador College and with elementary schools, where teachers in classrooms have had to take poor, distraught girls of 11 or 12 or 13, whatever begins to happen, and explain to them what was happening because they were just terrified over a sudden experience in class that their mothers had been too ashamed, too afraid, too whatever, too busy, too something to help this girl understand. And I think that is some kind of a terrible crime to expect a teacher in a classroom to to educate somebody's sweet little daughter who is having a normal thing happen to her that is just as normal as being born and as eating food, and having it instead come in as a giant emotional, psychological trauma where she goes through, she wonders if she's going to die, all sorts of fears in her mind, all sorts of embarrassment. Instead of a mother having gently prepared the girl for this, the teacher, I know of such cases, has had to tell the girl right then and there. Actually, I was kind of overlapping there ahead of time with the third one, which is keep communication lines open, and the fourth, which is anticipate problems, which is the example that I just gave you. Maybe if parents could anticipate those problems in advance and give the kids a little easier transition into puberty, as we call it, and the appearance of various body hair. You know, boys are very anxious about that, and all little babies, I suppose, young kids, boys especially, have cut themselves trying to shave with dad's razor. But they'll come in and stand and watch, and it's a really exciting thing to them. I remember when my sons were so tiny to come in and watch, they always really delighted in me taking my aftershave lotion and rubbing some on them. They were so anxious to get to the place where they would shave. Now they get to the place where they're supposed to shave, they let it go for 3 or 4 or 5 days till it looks bad, and they won't shave as often as they should. But kids are interested when the appearance of body hair begins to mark them as a man or a woman. And they ought to be given some natural expectance, some natural bridging of these phases or gaps of these development stages in developing bodies, to where it's an easier transition for them instead of some giant emotional trauma. So the fourth point was to anticipate those problems in advance and avoid sex education by crisis. Avoid some huge emotional explosion over something that happened on a date or something that was discovered, some problem that was not anticipated, and then zero in on it like a third degree, and everybody blows up, and nothing is really done right. The fifth point is to provide wholesome outlets for physical exercise, because during adolescence, when bodies are really growing rapidly, when they grow up, they become awkward, look like they're all feet and elbows and knees and so on, that's when tissue, bone, muscle are undergoing many massive changes. And they do grow when they're asleep. They tend to sleep a great deal during that age. But, you know, the body chemistry itself during that time of sex development, of sex awareness, of sex stimulation in school, playgrounds, etc., where first they become shy, and during that age of puberty, boys tend to want to be with boys and girls with girls, and just afterward, then they tend to develop far more of these contacts with the opposite sex, but in an embarrassed and oftentimes awkward way. Well, it's moving on down now into the 13-year group, 14-year group, where you're finding people that don't believe that there's any value whatsoever in retaining virginity, clear down in that age as a result of the social pressures and the sex revolution that is here. So realize what puberty is all about. Think back of exactly the way it was when you went through it, and use that knowledge in teaching and educating and helping your children to understand it. Provide wholesome outlets for physical activities. Make sure that your kids are involved in some sort of clear, definitive sports programs for feminine development or masculine development. And don't kid yourself at all that it's some kind of male chauvinistic pig-headedness of mine to say that men need to be taught to be developed along masculine lines and women along feminine lines. And I'm not talking about clinging vines and wallflowers or male chauvinist pigs. I'm talking about wholesome recreation and development of bodies, muscles, and so on. And I'm not talking about girls playing with dolls and boys playing with guns. But that's a subject that you ought to get cleared up in your own mind. There's plenty of literature available on subjects such as these, as well as what I can offer you free of charge. The sixth point is to prevent your child from inverted or perverted sex behavior. Now, inverted is a fancy word that's kind of new on people maybe today for any kind of selfish, inward-directed, inward-looking sex activity during the developing years. That includes autoeroticism, in other words. And that could include experiments with clothing of the opposite sex, transvestism. And if it's developed deeply enough, is not, well, let's say that you've got an upside-down home situation, an overly domineering mother, and a very quiet and almost effeminate father. It happens pretty often today, it seems. And you're going to very likely run the risk of a young boy developing certain homosexual characteristics. When you find a boy in his teens that begins to talk more like women do today, saying, oh yes, well that's my point of view too, started slurring his S's, you know, and his hands are so limp that every now and then a breeze comes along, blows his hand off his head. Well, have you ever heard people talk like that? I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. If the gay minister of the Fifth Avenue Gay Congregation Church is listening, let's aim on him. But anyhow, you will run the risk, I'm sincere in that, that if you have an overly smotherly loverly home, where mother kind of smothers the kid with mother domination and dad is kind of a little wispy kid, you know, character with a tremble chin and a jellyfish spine, the kid is probably going to develop into a homosexual. Let's just be honest about it. He probably will. He's got to have clear-cut lines of demarcation between what is man and what's woman, what's masculine, what's feminine, and away with the feminist movement for the moment of this discussion. I couldn't care less because I believe in God's word, which really implies that a man ought to be a man and a woman, and God is very glad for that, and so ought both of them be if they understood their roles. That a woman belongs in the home, that she is a mother and a wife by nature, by the way she's built, and by the way the Creator God designed not only her physiological and anatomical structure, but her very emotions and her mind. Anybody disagrees with that can take it up with God. Get on their knees and argue with Him. Don't argue with me, because I'm going to duck behind the authority of the Bible on that particular subject. So prevent your child from inverted sex behavior. Wrong companions can sometimes be a cause, but it nearly always is the home and the parental example. That's the real cause for that, nearly always. A hostile father, the absence of a father, a matriarchy, a mother-dominated home, something like that. Confused sex roles in parents, reversed sex roles in parents, that can cause a tremendous inverted sex behavior among developing children. Seventh and final is use the Bible as a tool to teach your children. That may surprise you. But the Bible examples, practical examples of sex that I've shown in other programs, the biblical training, the Ten Commandments, and the New Testament magnifies the relationship between husband and wife on the father being a strong symbol of parental authority and the mother being a supporter, a supporting role of upholding what he says and teaches and him supporting her when discipline comes up and so on. A strong example there based upon biblical teaching, and you can be guaranteed that you're going to have balanced and sound and wholesome children, and you'll avoid an awful lot of heartache and headache for them in the future if you are willing to order your homes aright according to what God's Word plainly says.
A nation is only as strong as its family. If our nation were as strong as your family, how strong would it be? And if relationships in your family are not what you would like, where can you go for help? Plain Truth, a publication of understanding, is concerned. Every Plain Truth brings you helpful articles on how relationships can be strengthened between husband and wife, parents and children, families and neighbors. With interesting and useful information on helping your child enjoy learning at home and school, budgeting and sensible use of credit, preventing teenage depression, household health and safety, homemaking tips for the working mother, achieving full human potential, coping with inflation. Plain Truth emphasizes quality in all aspects of daily living. Let Plain Truth help strengthen your family and nation. Request your free subscription today. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
You live in a sex-saturated society. So the question is, how do you protect your children? How do you buffer them from such a sexplosion of knowledge all around you? Well, I merely say you've got to beat society to it, because the trappings that are right there inside your home, you ought to take a good long look at that, for example. Even sports magazines these days, unfortunately, becoming more and more girly-type magazines. All types, it just is incredible. I think, frankly, Life magazine went down the drain because it didn't have the centerfold. I really do. That's my analysis of it. I don't know what Life magazine thinks about it, but I think that that's where it's at these days. You would be amazed, maybe you wouldn't, but you might, if you really looked at what the motion picture ads are like. If you looked at the movie ad page itself, you're going to be reading sections of just about pure pornography. I mean, some of it is so strongly suggestive, even in the titles of the racier movies, the triple X-rated, raw this and that, explicit and so on, sexplicit, as they're saying these days, in our sex-saturated society. You'd be amazed at what is lying right there in your own living room or family room that your kids are reading. Innuendos on television are commonplace now, even in some of the most widely acclaimed and accepted comedian roles, in some of the talk programs. open statements about virtually condoning homosexuality and transvestism and so on are there continually. Little charades about one man being affectionate toward another man, and people just laugh their heads off. They think that's just great. That's there. Dirty language at school, dirty language on the street, dirty language in this medium, dirty language in books, etc. It's there, isn't it? So can you really shield a child from the world? No, you can't. Not unless you live in out back in Australia or somewhere in Alaska, you can't. And even in Alaska, you'd have to be the other side of the Brooks Range, the chances are. And even there, if you have a radio, you can't. So the biggest key is to do as much as you can in that area, but mostly to practice what you preach. You yourself, in your own parental example, are going to be the key to all of this. Now, how can you keep a child from becoming overly anxious about, or hung up about, or in some way bothered about, or in some way maybe even perverse or twisted when it comes to sex? Step one, try your best to keep the world's attitude of permissiveness, of shifting sex roles, of justification for homosexuality, for pornography, for illegitimacy, its entire permissive sweep of the pendulum. Try your best to keep it out of your own life and keep it out of your own home. Step two, make sure your children don't learn the world's attitude while they are outside of the house. Don't compromise on them. Be willing to listen to your children. When you hear things along the fringes that seem to indicate your children are being influenced somewhere, try to find out where. Who are their friends? What do their friends' parents live like? Are they going over to a home where there's another teenager living with a mother who is living with several boyfriends in some kind of a communal hippie-like lifestyle, as they call it? Find out about that. Are they uplifting friends, or are they kind of tend to get into conversation that really gets right down into the gutter pretty frequently? What about the parents of your child's group and the group that he himself associates with? Do they follow the libertine notions of letting little children dabble in sex? Experiment with it, play around with it, find out, and try to follow up on that, not only in your own home, but with what is brought in from the outside. Three, be able to train your children to say no to wrong influences. Show them that it takes a strong character and that there is great merit in being able to call a halt and say no at a certain time and stick to it. And when they all say, oh, come on, everybody else is doing it, and they're laughing and they're about to leave in the car, and the kid says, well, maybe. No, teach your child to say no at the right time and being able to really stick to it. Teach them to be able to walk away from wrong behavior. And don't neglect the subtle influences of the world that are all around, whether it's romantic novels, movies, songs, pornographic displays, theater marquees, motion pictures, you name it. The romantic myths about Prince Charming or modern love or romantic kind of music and so on, it's all there. It's a romantic myth. It isn't real. It's completely false. The Twitter-pated idea and so on. That's the way to do it. It's a battle. It really is. It's just like waging a kind of a war. It's like realizing that there are thousands of influences out here, which if they hold free sway in your own child's life and are given free access into his mind and his heart, that your chances of having a really wholesome, well-rounded, balanced, refreshing idea in your kid's mind toward sex, and therefore a really good, strong chance for a wholesome sex relationship in later life and a successful marriage, you might as well kiss it goodbye. Forget it. Because it's just chance and happenstance and circumstance from then on. You've got to know how to do it. So there is definitely a missing dimension in sex. And that missing dimension is the knowledge of the Creator God and His plan and His purpose in putting us on this earth, the entire plan of reproduction. I want to tell you right now, I do not remotely believe whatsoever in any religion that says sex is for the purpose of propagating children only and should never be used except for that purpose. I don't begin to subscribe to that. I know better. And the Bible plainly teaches that sex is to be used to bind a home and a marriage together. It's to be used as often as either of the two or both desire, whether that is several times a week or maybe in the beginning stages, as popularly everybody knows, several times a day. And I'm not saying that humorously. I'm really not. I don't mean it wrongly. Somebody can take me to task and say, horrible, don't say things like that. Why not? It's a kind of a physical world in which we live, isn't it? Human beings are human beings, and I've heard the old analogy about the beans in a jar just as much as you have. I don't know whether it's true or not. I've never seen anybody that's really tried it, but I've heard it talked about. There is a missing dimension, and that is the knowledge of the Creator God, the knowledge that He gives us in that book which is called the Bible. It gives us information that we could not have otherwise discovered for ourselves. We have a book entitled The Missing Dimension in Sex. But I'm sorry, I can only offer it to adults only. That makes it sound kind of interesting, doesn't it? Adults only, please. X-rated book. Anyhow, We could only send it under our own policies, although I begin to wonder now that you look, you know, you can buy Playboy, I guess, if you're 11, can't you? But anyhow, in order that we don't offend anybody, and there are many people that have had, you know, sort of repressive puritanical teachings that they might see a child looking through this where there's some line drawings and so on, and I say, oh, that's terrible. So we've had to adopt that policy to avoid hurting anybody's feelings. The book entitled The Missing Dimension in Sex, we can send free of charge return mail if you write for it. Then I'd like to tell you about these booklets one more time that represent pretty much all we can give you on this subject right now, and also the plain truth about child rearing, because that's where it all begins, right there on the living room carpet when we're so tiny we're still playing with a little child's blocks. Well, you know, many people seemingly do not know. They've swallowed a lot of ideas about child psychology to make them think that every child is a thwarted genius. And so it goes into the subject of what is a child? An altogether lovely, laughable, happy, wonderful little reproduction of yourself, and hopefully a normal and a whole one that is not afflicted with some of the terrible congenital deformities of our time that happens so often. But even if you have those terrible handicaps, you need this booklet, perhaps even more so, on the plain truth about child rearing. Chapter 2, Criminals Are Made, Not Born. I don't believe for one instant that a person is predetermined to be criminal because of what a parent did or said or thought, or because of a certain number of genes or chromosomes or a certain blood type. This is discussed in Chapter 2 in the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing. Chapter 3 is how a child learns. How a child learns by example, by repetition, by simple teaching, and not by some of the abnormal kind of methods that parents use these days. It expresses how a child learns better in school, how you can better prepare a child to learn in school. Chapter 4 is entitled, You Can Punish Your Children in Love. And Chapter 5, How to Get Results, How to Make It Work. Chapter 6, Should Children Really Be Seen and Not Heard? That question, the old adage, you know, way back in the frontier days, that is asked and answered in Chapter 6 of this short book on the plain truth about child rearing. Chapter 7 is about children's games, how they play, some dangers to watch out for, the right kind of child's play. Your children at play, that's Chapter 7. Chapter 8 is how to prepare your children for school, how to train them so they'll be a better learner, a listener, a person that will sit still, will look to and respect the teacher. And Chapter 9, how to help your teenagers. There's never been a time in our society when the truth about child rearing was any more sorely needed. I have had letters from tens of thousands of parents around the world, from far-off New Zealand and from European countries, from Australia, from the Philippines, from South Africa, African countries, from all over the United States and Canada, telling me what a help, what an inspiration, what a daily handbook of solid, sound, common-sense advice this book on the plain truth about child-rearing has been to them. All you need to do is to write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. That's the only address you need, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.